folks. It's Chris Tapa with
Lisa Flicker.
And there is Julio somewhere out there in the universe. And that means you're listening to Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast. And today, we had an easy one because Sonny is a personal friend of mine. And his name is Sonny Iqbal. He is based in New York. He just moved from San Francisco, and he is working with a data center AI infrastructure company. It's in stealth mode. He worked at Google. He worked at Facebook. He has an engineering background. And Lisa, I know you're very much involved with a lot of your clients, working with them on how to use AI, but he is the person kind of, you know, when we use it, we need to store it somewhere and have it operate, and he's building all that stuff.
There's so many pieces of it, and it's so fascinating. I said this to him earlier when we were chatting, which is the barrier between the real estate people who understand the nuts and bolts of real estate and the AI machine learning people who understand far beyond what I could understand. It's just, you know, like, how do you bridge that gap? And I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch as we're putting people into shops in the future.
Yeah. Well, he said it's just a box with energy, but it's like, okay. But yeah, but then he was saying, yeah, it needs so much energy powering a city every time you build one of these things, basically. And like, where's the energy come from?
And right. And what do you do without it? I mean,
we live without it, but now, like, yeah, what would we do?
But now you can't. Yeah. It's interesting.
Anyhow, great interview. Amazing guy. Super smart. So with that, enjoy the podcast. Sonny, how are you, man?
Hello.
Why are you on our real estate podcast? You're not a real estate guy. You're a true tech nerd.
I pose as one, but yeah, I'm surprised I'm here too. I like real estate. I was a buildings guy, actually. So yeah, I used to do buildings back in the day.
Well, you
and by the way, soon the real estate and the tech are all going to blend in some very interesting ways. So I think you're ahead of the curve. You're here to tell the real estate industry what's forthcoming.
Well, you're at a stealth startup. I kind of know who it is, but I can't tell. I don't know exactly who it is, though, or what it is, but I know kind of what it does. So tell me, you worked at Google, you worked at Facebook. What do you do? What's your job? How does it relate to real estate?
I don't know what I do. Nowadays, I'm doing product management. So working on building infrastructure as a service. That's a fancy way of saying I want to buy infrastructure in the cloud, so AWS kind of stuff. But how I got here was actually starting in engineering and construction.
But you're working for a firm that's a stealth startup that is building data centers, correct?
Yeah, AI infrastructure.
AI infrastructure.
Yeah.
It would involve with data centers, correct?
Anyway.
He could tell you.
Anyway, so we're trying. So as you know, and Lisa is very much forward thinking in this, there's a lot of, we use so much data now, you can tell us, Sonny, like there's not enough infrastructure for all the data we're using and the internet, and it's been stretched, and there's a mad race out there to build all this infrastructure and create this infrastructure. Is that correct?
Yeah, for storing your data, there's enough, there's plenty to store all of the internet data. It's the compute part that's super power hungry that's really draining. And that's because of, you know, compute has always, you know, been growing year over year.
What does that mean, compute stuff?
Compute means CPUs. So, you know, Intel, AMD. In your general computer, you're going to have a CPU chip, and that's what I'm referring to as compute. It's just like the ones and zeros, kind of the basic math of any processing. But what's happening now is the shift from CPU workloads to GPU workloads, and that's because of the whole ML AI craze.
What's GP?
GPU is a graphics processing unit. processing unit.
I know nothing about computers. I'm a real estate
guy. We're going to need a glossary for this.
I should from.
So most of these people are listening to this podcast are probably going to be more, they're going to be real estate folks who like realize that technology is like, and this whole data center and internet, and this is affecting real estate companies, right? And real estate as the built environment. And so they're going to want to know, they're going to ask you, why, what can I do? How do we adapt? How's the world adapting? And so these terms are probably not going to be known to many people, some people, but not many. It's a different audience than you're probably used to.
Yeah, I'm like neck deep all the time, so doesn't even.
Talk to us like we're in kindergarten.
Yeah. But in general, right, what I was, you know, why it's affecting the built environment, I think it's two things, right? It's that the workloads are just getting more power hungry. That's one. And that means, you know, power infrastructure and the grid and utility companies need to plan for that. There's a deficit right now in the U.S. And then number two is that people are using their phones a lot. People are using their computers. That needs to be processed somewhere. And that when you, what the cloud actually is a bunch of buildings connected together across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
shaped like clouds.
Yeah, they don't. They're very boring buildings. they're square. You know, they're a bunch of racks. I think they're super cool. They're really fun to walk through. A lot of blinking lights and, you know, cool stuff like that. But yeah, the part what's happening is that everyone is on their phones and on their computers, meaning it's tapping that network pretty heavy, meaning you need more infrastructure to kind of distribute all of that, all of those, you know, call them phone calls to the cloud.
Wow. And so what is... I'm not doing anything about this. I'm just using it. Like, what are people like you doing to help make sure that we are, is it it's being stretched to a point where we need to create more of this infrastructure?
Yeah. More data centers.
And so what if we didn't create any more data centers? What would happen?
Then everyone would have to build their own little mini data center in their house or their office. And that used to be the case, right? Every office building had a little room.
Yeah, our server room.
Yeah, that's...
The server rooms, right? For the AV guys, right?
Yeah.
So that room used to be in every building, and now those are going away because they're moving all of that to the cloud, right? And what that means is that those racks are still there. They're just managed by someone else, and they charge you a margin on it. And yeah, there it's cheaper when you have the economies of scale,
right?
And then, you know, you get the latest and greatest technology because you don't have to do it yourself, right? You don't have to keep swapping out or maintaining it. So if we didn't have data centers, we would have a lot more, you know, in the real estate land, they call them core rooms, or they call them there's a bunch of words for them, right? But the server room,
right? Yeah.
So what do you think, because it's interesting, I think about how like the first computer was gigantic and now it's in your pocket. Do you think that it's a sustainable business to be in data centers? Do you think that over time it'll need less and less space to hold what they need? Or is my question just so amateurish that you can't answer it?
It's a great question, right? The phones or the chips are getting really small on the user side, but these data centers are getting way bigger on the other side. So these are like these supercomputers. It's going like the other direction where these data centers are, you know, they can consume gigawatts of capacity, and they're massive. Like I'm getting excited now. They're super cool. They're really cool infrastructure, and there's cabling everywhere, like, you know, thousands and thousands of meters and feet of cabling that, you know, you could basically stretch it, you know, probably like run like 7 marathons, and it still wouldn't be enough cable to do one data center.
Wow. And it's expensive, right? I mean, I remember working with data center firms, man, like 10 years ago, maybe, possibly, and how it was like there was kind of, it had to be out in the middle of nowhere. right? And like every mile of cable cost a gazillion dollars or something like that. And it was, is it still, like, are you still, do we still have to put them out in the middle of Timbuktu somewhere?
Yeah. The only reason they're out there, there's a few different gears, right? And the big power hungry ones, the biggest ones, are going to be in these, yeah, kind of middle of nowhere. I used to travel to like, you know, Oklahoma and Iowa and like all these like, you know, places that nobody really goes to. But, you know, the power is cheap. The power is cheaper. They're incentivizing tech companies to come there because it creates jobs. It's good for the local economy. I still remember back in 2011. Flying into Prineville, Oregon, which Facebook has a data center there, and they had like a big sign, like we love Facebook. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, that was a thing. But yeah, they're typically in those places because of one, land is cheap, and then two, utility power, which is the driving cost, the driving operating cost for any really like cloud business is going to be electricity and chips. Cost is actually quite small, surprisingly.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because you don't need a lot.
I imagine you don't need such skilled labor, right? Is that,
I mean,
is that why?
Look at them. Look at Sonny. Come on. He's cheap.
Yeah, they don't. I'm cheap, man. Like, I'm nothing compared to, like, one of these, like, GPU boxes, which are, like, $250K. We humans are dirt cheap.
But I mean, I know as far as like managing the centers, I remember it was like pretty like, you don't need a lot of people to manage these centers, right?
No. They're like low occupancy buildings. So, you know, in an ideal like world, like there's been some fancy robotic stuff that's been going on to like switch drives and, you know, maintain the data center. But for the most part, it's intended to be hands-off. That's kind of your design goal.
So your career, you said you started, it was, I know you're Canadian.
Yeah.
You're my favorite Canadian. My third favorite Canadian. You know who my first one is?
No, who's that?
Rick Moranis.
I don't know who that is.
Rick Moranis? He was in Ghostbusters. He was in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. I know how he looks like then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know.
You're in good company.
I saw him at the South Street Seaport when it used to be called the South Street Seaport. In New York. And so we met in the Bay Area. You started as an engineer, right, in building, and then moved to technology, and now you're combining the two, potentially?
Yeah. No, that's been the coolest part. I really liked computers growing up. I was tinkering with them. My dad is an engineer. He's also a mechanical engineer like I am. He tricked both me and my brother to, you know, get excited about buildings because, you know, as an immigrant, he's like, look, this is the most stable industry. Buildings will always be built. You will always have a job. That's a good sell, right? And he had a little consulting business. And, you know, I learned that from a young age, just helping him with like drawings and cameras and stuff like that. But I was sticking with the computers. So when he started my career, I worked at a company called Era. It's a buildings firm. It's really cool. I got to work in like really cool.
Do they do like public-private stuff? Is that Arab? Yeah.
They do. So they kind of designed like all the rail in Europe. They did the Sydney Opera House. I worked on Guggenheim in Abu Dhabi. I worked on, you know, the Apple building. Yeah, like they take like some cool, like the cool flagship projects. So really the mega ones. And yeah, some of them are PPP. Some of them are, you know, it's more of the expensive buildings.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
So then
you were doing that. And then how did you transition into more the technology side of things?
Yes, I got hired as an intern at Facebook. And that was my initial blend where I was doing mechanical stuff there, working on like evaporative cooling and that's kind of how we cool the data center and environment.
I remember having to open those doors for our server rooms. Cool the server room. Put blocks of ice in there and stuff. Fans. Get the fans going.
Yeah. They're swamp. They call
it like yesterday.
Coolers. Yeah, swamp coolers for the EVAP stuff. Yeah, generally, like, it's more efficient. It's like free cooling, right?
You were the fan guy.
I was the fan guy. Yeah, I was the fan guy. I remember, like, when I was at Arup, I used to do, like, you know, plumbing and HVAC and fire protection and just doing, like, all of these diagrams, which just fun, but also, like, it's more real to me when these things start getting built. But then when I got Facebook, like, these were client side. So now we're, like, actually looking and, like, driving the design from what the requirements of the technology are. And that was...
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like, holy crap. Like, I remember having to design these things for the client. But here on this side, it was a small team at the time, right? It's 2011. We're like 10, 20 people. And our budget was like the biggest budget because it's so expensive to deploy data centers. We're signing these like really expensive contracts. And I was like, this is insane. Like, this is really cool. You get to put these computers into these buildings. And yeah, the mechanical and building systems were interesting, but I got really interested in like what's driving the stuff that's powering that building.
You keep flickering. You're is that me or you? Your kind of thing keeps flickering.
It's not me. You're flickering too.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Turn my video off. Maybe it's slow. Maybe Julio's taking a nap. I'm sure, but. Sure. Sorry, go ahead.
So is there any overlap between cold storage and data centers not from a real estate perspective, but from a technology perspective? Do you think that somebody who's doing cold storage warehouses would have an upper hand in creating data centers?
So there are a bunch of people that I've seen lately transition into the data center business. And the ingredients of that to start is just tons of utility. When that crypto craze was going on, there was a bunch of shops that opened up that had a bunch of GPU chips or Bitcoin miner chips, and they had these facilities. And then they have actually transitioned to cloud, like general, you know, fueling the whole AI boom that's going on. So yeah, for a cold storage facility, generally cold storage is, you know, lower on the power side, but if it's big enough, then yeah. Typical, you know, useful, you know, megawatts of computers, usually around like 5, you kind of need that to start with. But, you know, anywhere from 5 to, you know, 100 megawatts is kind of like your data center range. Smaller than that, you're kind of too small, yeah, for to get the scale that you have.
And then you went over to Google, Google, and what were you doing there?
I started in buildings. I started in server hall design. So layouts again, putting the racks where they should be, making sure they have enough power, enough cooling, enough networking. I got to travel all over the US and the world to like all these cool data center sites. I think my like aha moment was like, holy crap, you know, 70% of the world's internet gets pumped through Google. So kind of like,
oh wow.
It's like the infrastructure of the internet sort of. So like everything is hitting Google first.
Oh.
So as like, you know, like population kind of grows and phones go on, like they're all like Googling, right?
Right.
So they all have, you know, you have to scale up as part of that. So that was fascinating. But yeah, I was on the server hall side doing layouts, I worked on fiber optic cabling and stuff like that. So taking, these computers are connected by a bunch of networking chips. And then those networking chips, as I mentioned, they have all this cabling that goes around, and it was designing the cable trays and the fiber optic cabling to, you know, get them all wired. I did that. And then I did NPI, which is new product introduction. So taking hardware that the R&D teams were dreaming up, right? Taking it from, you know, zero to one, and then taking that hardware and having the right tools to scale it across that ginormous fleet I mentioned. That kept me pretty interested for a long time. I did that for like 5 years because, you know, it's just like new. There's always something new, some new chip. There's always some new cool thing. And I got to like see everything as it came out and then, you know, see it just get deployed everywhere across the world. So that was like really fun.
Wow.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, that was, it was great.
It was cool stuff. Near the end, I was working on HPC, high performance computing. And that sort of worked its way into like machine learning. They sort of look the same from a workload perspective. And then I ended up in AI. Yeah, they call it AI, but you know, it's been called machine learning for a while.
What's so interesting to me is that as the real estate industry tries to adapt some of this stuff and bring over people like yourself, there's like, it's almost like a language barrier, right? The difference between what you know and understand and what somebody who owns and manages buildings knows and understands, there's kind of a wall there. And so I'm wondering if you had a prediction as to how you think you might be working with real estate owners and developers in the future. I'd love to hear what you think that might look like.
Good question.
I didn't mean to throw you such a hard
question. Yeah, no,
you can answer it later.
Yeah, no, because I've seen it on both sides, right? Because my brother is still, doing buildings, and I'm still interested in buildings, but I'm doing compute, and there is a bit of a language barrier, but we connect on, you know, the general things like what is the power that's delivered to that data center or that building, looking at the density of power that can get distributed. So an interesting metric is like kilowatts per square foot, right? That's useful because that translates to the amount of compute or the amount of like chips you can fit in a given square foot. So those translations are there. And then the same thing with cooling as well, right? How much the power translates to X amount of cooling. Go ahead.
Have you seen a lot of, the capital that competes for real estate? Like, I feel like there's a capital race right now to start building these things. And is that happening, and like kind of where is it? Who's going to own all these data centers? Google?
It's a race. It's hard to say. There, whatever that can be bought will be bought. What I've seen that's really successful on the real estate side is that real estate is generally in these urban environments, right? And those end up being these tier one locations for the, you know, you're the closest to the density of the population. So those are like the mini data centers that grab all of the local pings from your phones and your computers and stuff like that. So that's like an interesting segue into like, you can convert some real estate in a city, right? Given enough power, into a little mini data center, right? And then you're called what they call a co-location provider. Where you just manage, it's not that hard actually. You manage like the power and the space and the cooling, and you let other people come and just shove the racks in there.
Interesting. I wonder if that's an alternative use for some of our office space that isn't being used.
Yeah. How about that?
Yes. Stick the racks in. And yeah, totally.
I mean, San Francisco, downtown, right?
Yeah.
We're solving all the world's problems here, right here on Beyond the Resume.
And then, are you seeing any like super innovative ideas regarding data centers? Like, I mean, we've heard, oh, it's going to be up in, you know, we're going to put it on Mars. Not really, but like, under the sea with Ariel.
Yeah.
Have you heard any of those ideas?
They've tried some of that stuff. Google had a container you can shove under the water. It's hard to connect, right? It's difficult, you know. There is another company that's pretty cool called Crusoe. they're doing something really cool where there's these oil fields out there and they have flares, right? The oil will ignite and they're capturing that energy because it's just wasted energy. And they're powering these little mini, you know, it's like a little trailer and they're doing that. And they're doing it. They've done very well lately. But yeah, that's a really cool bit where there's tons of unmonetizable energy in these places that are, you know, getting, so like you take the fat off of it and you power some compute, right? That's a cool way to kind of, you know, keep things efficient. In terms of like what like the big concerns are, I think just environmentally, like humans continue to like leverage technology in all the different ways that are offered, and that's really starting to consume so much power. And then that means that we get more dependent on the, you know, the tried and true, you know, fossil fuels. Those are always there. They're reliable. There's tons of it. And that's not good for the environment, right? So I think that's going to be an interesting place where, you know, we're going to need to start balancing what we're consuming on the energy side and the way we are providing that energy. I think those are interesting, you know, problems that need to be solved.
Maybe some regulations around that, you think? Government regulations?
That's kind of what keeps the big companies at bay, right? So they'll buy credits, renewable credits, to offset their consumption. Or they'll, you know, install some solar panels, which, you know, there's not enough solar to kind of power data center, but there's ways, and like, you know, most of the tech companies are on board with the, you know, the long term thinking. But in general, right, like, you know, we're in the U.S., which we're, you know, we're trying to be as responsible as you can be, but there's other countries out there that don't have those higher level principles involved. And yeah, it's just a ton of energy, yeah, a lot.
Right, and you wonder. Yeah, you know, it's climate week next. I think it's next week here in New York, or, you know, it's climate week. And I'm wondering, like, how much change can you impact when you have countries like India, China, you know, like what? I mean, I guess you have to try your best, but I'm just curious, do you think we can move the needle?
Global scale? I don't know, right? Because these countries have very different problems, right? They have different issues that they're trying to solve, and you know, it may not be the priority. The priority might be just getting stable energy. The priority might be to be able to have enough compute to, you know, help these large, you know, billion people population, right? Which is super tough.
Right.
I think, yeah, it's just kind of wild. Because like a data center, right? Like 75 megawatts is like it's like a city, right? It's like a city, and that's considered like not small, but like a medium size, which is just wild because the trends are just pointing, yeah, up and to the right.
More energy.
Yeah. Maybe we should put them in the water now.
And there are patents for putting it under the water and putting it up in the sky. And I keep joking because I'll order something on Amazon and literally it'll show up at my front door an hour later. I'm like, it must be in the sky. Like, it must have literally, they're like, Lisa likes Colgate.
She does like Colgate. She hates Crest.
I do.
Sponsored by Colgate. Well, Sonny, yeah, I mean, it's exciting. I can't wait to see what's happening with your new venture. When are you going to be able to go public with what's going on?
Yeah, hopefully next couple of years, right? These things take time to build, but yeah, I guess the TBD on that. It is really cool to kind of be in this space for starting, you know, in you know, just buildings and then kind of sifting and seeing it from different angles. That's been super interesting. And then I still, you know, I get to talk to you guys, which is just awesome.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll come back when you're out of stealth mode, and we can break the story right here. I'm beyond the resume.
Good. Sonny, you left the Bay Area, you left me, and you moved to go see Lisa in New York. And how are you enjoying New York Is it a nice fall day, autumn day?
Yeah, the weather is good now. I actually didn't love my time when I first moved because it's right in the peak of summer.
Mm.
And it is hot, and these subways are extreme. They're ovens. Being in California for 10 years, I definitely wasn't used to that.
Well,
now I like it.
Picture yourself in the hottest subway you've ever been in, and you will be in the hot seat.
Oh!
Are you ready? Are you sweating,
sir?
Next stop.
All right.
Pain. Question number one.
We'll give you an easy one.
Sir, I know you. I can see you sweating. Do you have a book or podcast recommendation?
Right now, I'm reading a book by Marty Kagan called Transform. It's like more product oriented, but a recommendation, I would say there's one called the AI Daily Brief. It's like a download of like interesting news. It's like 15 minutes. I like that, you know, in the morning, like what I consume early.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Go on.
Interesting. So traditionally we ask if you have a most memorable deal, but I'm wondering, is there a deal that you did when you were working on the real estate side that kind of sparked what you're doing now? Do you think there's any kind of a deal that you remember working on that you're like, oh, this is really interesting and kind of led you to more of a technology-focused look at machine learning, AI, et cetera?
It's kind of when I started picking up on these server rooms, right, that were getting built. And I was like, huh, like that's a lot, right? And that's not like just a small one. That's a bigger one. These are like these mini data centers in cities. And that kind of got me interested. And then when I seen it, you know, on a large scale at Facebook, you know, that's when it all kind of clicked. I'm like, oh, cool. You don't need all the other stuff. You could just do the rack cooling and stuff and forget all the other walls and stuff in the building. Yeah.
You're like, I'm lugging these fans to these small server rooms. I could lug these fans to these big server rooms.
Basically, yeah.
I'm sure you've done a lot of, like, what? We usually ask the question, what do you look for in hiring someone? I'm sure you've hired people as well, but like, what do you think what is the real estate world going to have to do in order to start more adapting to this world that we're moving into with AI and machine learning? I know it's a huge question.
Yeah, I think it's not like, I think it's just a genuine curiosity and being someone that can then learn quickly. I think those two are generally like, you know, good enough, like in a hard work ethic. Like those two ingredients are great ingredients for anything, whether in real estate, whether in data centers. I think those are like the qualities that, you know, I think they go across everything, right? And like being able to break down a problem into its like component part is a super helpful skill to kind of like look at, you know, a very tough problem to solve, and then like kind of breaking it down into little bitty parts. Kind of like real estate, right? You got to take like a difficult thing and break it up into this different parts. It's the same concept.
Interesting. So you talked a little bit about your dad, but I'm wondering, what mentors have you had throughout your career? Is there any one, two folks that are in particular have had a big impact on who you are today?
Oh, so many. I've been really fortunate to work with really good leaders and, you know, smart people. Yeah, it's hard to pick anyone, but I think, you know, at different stages of my career, I've seen different characteristics and traits. And like, I guess lately, I've been kind of picking up on, you know, vouching for the people that work for you, fighting for them. Making sure you can juggle all these balls while also being the ability to listen and be compassionate. I think those are like qualities that I really admire and folks I work with. Yeah, I'm working with some incredible folks now, and it's a little different where it's more like, you know, a can-do attitude and like focusing on execution while, you know, being thoughtful about, you know, the way we're making decisions. Yeah, those have been my latest takeaways.
Nice, man. Well, it's been awesome to, I mean, you've taught me so much about this world, and it's a whole new world. We're all moving in that direction, and it's a little scary, I think, for a lot of people, like what's happening here and like all this data and power and all this stuff, and then who owns it and what do we do with it, blah, blah, blah. But I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience with us, and it's very insightful.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to Beyond the Resume. We're grateful for your support. All episodes of Beyond the Resume are brought to you by Jackson Lucas, building inclusive and diverse businesses through talent acquisition. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com